go into the bathroom. And instead of my legs going to sleep for sitting too long, I didn't feel anything until I went to go stand up and my knee blew.
That's always the worst. That happens quite often. Yeah. Like I've had that happen quite a bit. Yesterday I hit my funny bone for the first time in years.
Oh.
And the amount of four-letter words that were worst. Screamed at towards my cats, which they didn't do anything wrong. I felt bad for them because they were caught in the crossfire the entire time. I was like, ah, screaming. Plus, like, I did all that reorganization the other day. And so, like, there's just a bunch of random crap in my kitchen and living room right now. And I'm just tripping over everything right now.
Reorganizing a room or a space in general is the most liberating feeling, though. Once you're done, you're going to be like, I feel like a brand new person.
Yeah, it really is. I had to put an electric drum set back in that room because I'm taking pictures of it to sell on Facebook Marketplace. And when I was in there yesterday to set it up to take pictures, I was like, yeah, this sucks. There was so much room and now there's not. I'm sad. So yeah. it needs to go so that there's still that liberating amount of room because it's so nice to like actually have space.
Oh. Thank you everybody for coming back to Finding My Perfect Awkward after like a month, 2 month hiatus. I can't even express the amount of emotion I have about that and about coming back and about who I have on this week. Hi, Ryan Smetzer.
Hello, welcome back from hibernation.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's weird because there was so much chaos and I was like, you know what? I can only do so many things at once and moving is a priority. And I already have so much emotion about moving across the country for the first time ever. So I was like, something, you know, I got to take a break and now I'm back and it's crazy.
Yeah, especially because the move was like, what did I say? It was like moving from Sin City to the Bible Belt. Like you've kind of, it's a little bit of a shift, not too much of a shift, but a shift.
It's a lot of a shift. It's a culture shock for sure. A major mm-hmm. culture shock. It's Vegas is a big city, but it's also a small town feel. Everybody who has lived there their entire lives and was born and raised either knows everybody or at least knows somebody who knows somebody. So it's definitely has that small town feel. But you're not too far away from the big city if you want it. Here, you got to drive an hour to feel that big city feel. Otherwise, I got off a plane and I ended up in 2005.
Yeah. And the big city feel is a different big city feel here than it is there. Whereas like the big city feel that you guys have in Vegas is probably like, you know, more of that like fun entertainment, you know, kind of vibes. Whereas like the big city feel where you've got, which is like New York and Philly, is like a lot more angry and negative.
there's a lot more hustle and bustle.
Yeah.
Especially in New York, you start going more north. There's a lot more hustle and bustle. There's a lot more people. I definitely went back in time and there's less people. It's very calm as far as because there's not so many people and not so much going on.
You're like torn between like you've got like the big city right here and then like, you know, another hour away and you're literally in Amish country. Like that's not even like a joke. Like Amish country exists very close to where you are. I have an event up that way like next Tuesday and I'm like, I literally have to make sure that I schedule time so that I beat horse and buggy traffic, which is a literal thing.
That is a thing.
I had that. There was like a Pennsylvania Dutch community outside of my college campus that when I would commute to college, I would have to walk into class and say, sorry, I'm late. I got stuck behind horse and buggies. So that's the culture shock that you're talking about.
Wow. Yeah. No, it's major. Sin City to our from Amish country. It's, yeah.
But I mean, if you come down here to like the Hagerstown area, we've got one airport and it goes to Tampa and Orlando, and that's basically it. Because it's more so of like private jets and stuff like that. And we just built like a new runway a couple of years ago so that Air Force One can land there, which was pointless because now, but like whoever the president is at any given time, they just land like the helicopter at Camp David instead. But the idea was like you land Air Force One, then they can drive from Hagerstown to Camp David because it's only like 25 minutes away. But it was kind of like a little bit of a waste. But yeah, you can fly to Florida and that's about it. And they used to be able to fly to Pittsburgh, but again, that's a 3-hour drive, so why not just drive?
Yeah, you can just drive. What? Yeah. In that case, though, then the way of thinking is, well, then why fly anywhere in the East Coast? Because then you can just drive.
Yeah.
You know, basically, 5 hours away from Boston, 3 hours away from, well, from where I'm at, 3 hours away from New York. Mm-hmm. Just drive. Why would I fly? You know what I mean? So, like, with that way of thinking,
yeah, it's the same way with us. Like, I'm, you know, three hours from Philly, 3 hours from Pittsburgh, and about an hour and some change from both Baltimore and D.C. So it's like, you know, I've got four of the larger cities like kind of nestled in the outskirts of where I'm at. So it works out well.
All right, Ryan, where did you start and how did you get there?
Yeah, so I actually started the same company that I'm at right now is where I started. So in about 2015, just as I was getting out of community college and transferring to my final 2 years of college at Shippensburg, I had gotten a call from my dad that was like, hey, I was listening to Mix 95 and they were running a commercial that they're looking for somebody to fill their Saturday morning position from 10 to 2. You should send a demo. And I had like sent them stuff before. Like I had sent demos to like all the stations in the area and, you know, either didn't hear back or you heard that they weren't available and or there wasn't, you know, any openings or anything. And so I was like, yeah, I'll throw something out there to see what happens. So I sent my demo in and I had gotten a call on a day that just happened to be the same day that I got a root canal. So my mouth was like freakishly numb. I like could barely talk, but I was calling a baseball game at the community college that I had gone to and worked at as a student worker doing like PA announcing and play by play. And of course it was terrible. I was like, not batting number 12. Like I was falling apart because I was so numb. And then I get this call from a Chambersburg number and I'm like, oh crap. Like, I guarantee I know exactly who this is. And I wanted to introduce myself, wanted to see if you might be able to come up for an interview. And I'm trying my absolute hardest to sound like normal me and try to enunciate all the while. I can't feel my face. And so I apologized. I was like upfront. I was like, look, I just got a root canal 2 hours ago. So I apologize in advance. Like I'm a mess. So, you know, talk to them. I get, you know, through and I do the interview and I get the job and you know, it was part-time position, did 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays. And as things started to get busier with my wedding business, it kind of became to where I was like doing some Saturdays and then some fill-in stuff. And my senior year of college was when they had brought me on what they called full part-time, which I thought was kind of a silly way to call it. But it was basically, hey, we want you to be on a recurring, you know, time slot other than just random Saturdays. So they brought me on to do 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And I was doing nights, which it was like, you know, no other radio station in the area had a night show. And they, you know, they wanted to bring it back. It was something that was big, you know, on that station in the 90s. And so they were like, here, you know, let's see how this goes. And so they brought me on to do the night show and did that for a little while, worked in marketing for, you know, a little bit. And then finally I was like, I want to be able to do radio full time, but I want to get the healthcare benefits. I want to get, you know, all of those things that, you know, I need to live. And so I had negotiated my way into doing full time sales in radio for about 2 years from like 2017 ish to like 2020. And so, you know, and then at a certain point, whenever I started the sales job was whenever we had launched Live 96.7. And that was actually a station that was a hip hop station for about 15 years as Wild 96.7. And our corporate entity at Alpha Media reached out and they were like, hey, we want to kind of freshen the brand up a little bit, but we want to put a voice on the station. There had never been a voice on the station. It was just automated music running 24/7, but it was the number one station in the area. And it was kind of this weird, unheard of thing of like, okay, this is just like a rolling playlist of music. How is it number one? And how can we make it actually like monetizable? Cause the revenue was never good. And so they were like, well, hey, let's freshen up the branding a little bit and let's put a voice on the station. So they had asked me, they're like, could you, you know, could you do it? So they brought me on board, and I was doing a live air shift from 2 to 6 while I was also selling the stations during the day and then driving up to Chambersburg after my 2 to 6 show to do a 6 to 10 show on Mix, which was chaos, but it was doable. It worked. And I basically worked from like 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Went home, worked out, and went to bed. I barely slept. It was a journey. And then finally, whenever COVID happened, obviously things shifted gears to where, you know, we had to work from home. And so we all brought our, you know, equipment and home and started, you know, working on being able to track from home and all of that. But from a sales perspective, I was just in that spot where my heart just wasn't in the sales end of things. And that was kind of the idea from the get-go. Like our GM had known, I told him, I was like, look, like, I'm only doing this because of the healthcare benefits, and I want to learn both sides of the radio aisle, so to speak. But I want to eventually work full time and on air. And so I had, you know, kind of talked to our, you know, our higher ups, and I was like, look, like, you know, I'm in a spot where I want to be able to be full time in radio and, you know, not just doing like the sales stuff to get the full time benefits. I want to be able to do all of my on air stuff and get those benefits. And, you know, the only way that I see myself being able to do that is if I explore, you know, other options. And so we were able to kind of work something out to where I shifted out of sales and into on air. And since beginning of 2021, I've been on air on both of our stations full time and then handling content, news. When we'd lost our news director back in like the spring of 2020, and they basically reached out and they were like, hey, you have a journalism degree, right? I was like, yeah. And they're like, cool. So you're going to do the morning news every day. So do that for a little while. And then social media for all of our stations and all that kind of stuff, which obviously kind of goes hand in hand now just with the typical day. But
that's the story of radio, though. Everybody wears multiple hats and you wear 20,000.
Like, right. Well,
the name of the game.
And the news thing was so interesting because, like, you know, the one thing that, like, I always tell people is my big, like, mantra when it comes to anything content, whether it's the radio stuff or stuff on social, is I'm always promoting positivity. And it's always like the fun stuff, the stuff that's going to make people laugh or smile. I never like getting into the like blood and guts, this sad thing happened kind of stuff. And that's part of why, yeah, like I've never really gotten into like television news, because the same exact thing. It's hard for me to keep a sad face. Like I would be the one that would be enthusiastically smiling at the camera. And so that was hard. That was really difficult to maneuver. And, you know, so, and especially then you'd get messages from people of like, how dare you say this way? How dare you say this about this person? And, you know, like people that were against one side or the other. And I'm like, I've entered the Thunderdome when it comes to the news side of things. Because again, like, you know, it's a very rural population in this area. I mean, where you are and where I am from a like population demographic perspective is pretty similar. And so, like, you know, with that said, like, you know, you would say something in a story and I'd get a phone call that was like, you know, how dare you say this way? How dare you accuse this person of something that they didn't do? And I'm like, well, no, I just read what was on the AP wire. Like, yeah, I'm just reading the facts there, buddy. But
yeah, like this legitimately happened at 5 a.m. this morning, and I have to just tell you that it happened. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, the amount of times I've been accused of being like, you know, hardcore on the left or hardcore on the right, and I'm like, I'm the least political human being that you could meet. Like,
well,
that's
then regardless, you're just saying the facts, like you're saying. Like, you're not saying an opinion.
Right.
You're stating something that actually happened.
Exactly. Yeah. COVID was the craziest with that stuff, because I was like, you know, hey, here are the places where you can get your vaccine. And the amount of phone calls that were like, stop telling people to get that thing. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I'll just stop talking.
You are 100% filled to the top with hype. You love to hype people up. You love to smile. You love to spread positivity.
Right. And that was, I mean, that's tough for some things. Like whenever I get asked to, you know, do the like closings and delays, they'll be like, hey, can you do all the snow cancellations this morning? And I like, you know, I've gotten calls before that are like, hey, you might need to tone it down a little bit. Cause I'll be like, you know, and Anne Arundel County Public Schools, you're closed. Whitesboro, hey, you got yourself a snow day too. You know, because it's like, you know, when you're just rattling them off nonstop from, you know, A to Z, you know, going through all the different school districts and stuff, especially in Pennsylvania, there are, you know, because there are townships and different school districts, districts and stuff. Whereas like here in Maryland, like, you know, we have Washington County, we have Frederick County, it's counties. But in PA, you know, Franklin County, which is where most of our listening audience is for Mix, there are probably like 25 to 27 school districts because there's just so many different little townships and towns in the area. And so it's like, you know, I'll be reading through them. I'm like, Southern Fulton Township, Southern Huntington Township. And so I either have two choices, read them in the most boring way. And you know, people are just bored out of their mind because they can access that on their phones, or rattle them off like a fun auctioneer and just see how it goes. Because it's like, you know, those are the things that it's like, hey, you make the most of it. Same thing goes with like COVID. Like, you know, we were rattling off all the different, you know, funding options or the different places, the food banks and, you know, testing centers and all that kind of stuff. It was like, yeah, I can either make this sound like we're all doomed to apocalypse, or I can make it the most lighthearted thing to make, despite the fact that it's, you know, not the greatest scenario.
So with all of that said, and you describing how you got to where you are, what do you want to do next? What is the goal for Ryan?
Yeah. So I've always said that, like, you know, since the very beginning, whenever I was like 8 or 9 years old, I would like, you know, take my mom's old tape recorder and record over like episodes of American Top 40, or like host my own version of American Idol at the playground when I was in elementary school. So like, I've always wanted to kind of follow the Seacrest path in the sense of like, you know, starting in radio and still continuing in some sort of, you know, audio medium, whether it's, you know, radio down the road or if it's, you know, podcasting, whatever it might be, but expanding it out to an on-camera capacity, doing more video content, doing more, you know, live streamable content, hosting on television, you know, whatever that looks like over the next 5 to 10 years, you know, doing that kind of stuff is what I want to be able to eventually start doing more. And I realized that, like, in this, you know, kind of small town area, I still have the opportunity to do that because the internet exists. And so I've been kind of expanding that a little bit. But I know that, like, I've kind of created this like 5 to 10 year plan for myself of like, I want to be able to kind of expand to a larger market or be able to have, you know, my own morning show or, you know, all of those different things. So, you know, setting your sights high, and then just, you know, kind of seeing where the roller coaster of this industry kind of takes me, I think is where I'm kind of at right now.
But with everything moving in the digital age and social media being such a big thing, and even if it's not TV, if it's some type of video work in general, it's definitely needed because that is where everything is going or is at right now.
Right. Like, I see people all the time that, you know, they'll talk to me about it and they're like, well, you know, our station or our, you know, network or whatever, you know, we've got a ton of terrestrial listeners or viewers and, you know, we're good. We've got this under control. We don't have to do, why do we have to start doing TikToks? Why do we have to start making reels? Or, you know, why do we need to go live on location at this place or at this place? And I'm like, because that's how people are seeing stuff. You know, yep. at the end of the day, like, yes, they have the station to tune into. They have the channel to tune into, or they have this and that and the other thing, but more people are consuming content the same way they are food. When they're hungry, they're going to go get it. They're going to cook it and they're going to eat it. You know, they're not going to be like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm listening at this specific time. And, you know, so those days we're evolving out of it. It's not to say that, you know, we're evolving away from one medium or the other. I think that anytime, like, the tough conversation is always when you start talking to somebody about how media is evolving more to digital, people start accusing you of immediately saying that, like, oh, radio's dying or TV is dying. Somebody had called and won, and they were 85 years old. They had asked if they could have their like helper drive them to the station to pick up the gift card. And I was like, first of all, yeah, same reaction. It was the most adorable thing in the world. But I was like, are you listening? They're like, oh, well, I've got my grandkids here and blah, 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 blah. They don't know how to dial a phone. And I was like, how old are they? And they're like, they're 19. And I'm like, ah.
Like, wait a second. A 19-year-old didn't know how to dial a phone?
And I'm curious, if I was the one that asked them personally, like, why they didn't dial, I doubt it was that they didn't know how to dial the phone. I think it's just because, like, that generation doesn't like making phone calls. Like they don't dialing the number.
The text only, the message only. Yeah.
Yeah. Text only, or, you know, FaceTime, Marco Polo all that kind of Snapchat. So like that's what she was saying it as if like, oh, they just don't know how to dial the phone. And I'm like, well, I doubt it's that they don't know. I think that's, they're just like not interested in making a phone call. Whereas if we can get people to go on and they, you know, they log on, they enter to win and they share it to their Facebook page and get extra entries and all that kind of stuff. So we've evolved a lot into like doing that kind of stuff, because again, it's just like, well, hey, let's be like the first, you know, first time adopters of this kind of stuff, instead of being like, you know, caller number blah 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 is, you know, is the winner, and we've got, you know, 85-year-old Lucy calling to get her Martin's gift card. Because then it's like, okay, well, if we're giving away like tickets to like Kendrick Lamar, then, you know, how is that going to work out? Because we're probably not going to have like the lady from the nursing home calling in to win those versus a grocery gift card.
Right. And all of the prizes, I would hope, are set to the demographic. So the demographic is, you know, 20 to 35, you know what I mean? It's going to be set to whatever the demo is. Keeping it on digital, it's more like every station needs to make sure that, like when I said that I got off a plane, I ended up in 2005. Mm-hmm. I did, as a city, the city-wise, the people-wise. Yeah. I walked out and I was like, wow, they just got a liquor store within the last few years. Okay, that's new to me. Not just because I came from Vegas, right, where there's a liquor store on every street corner, but I also came from a place where I can go to California. There's liquor stores all over the place.
Yeah.
Arizona, liquor stores all over the place.
And then it regulates it.
Right. Exactly. I go to a different place that is kind of getting with the times now.
Mm-hmm.
They have to, like, we all have to make sure that we're growing with the times, that every radio station is growing with the times. Otherwise, you get left behind. And even though radio might not be dying, TV might not be dying per se, it is evolving into the new methods of distribution.
Right. And it takes some taking chances too, because I mean, like, there are some social media platforms that have not worked out, but we've still tried them. Like, I'll never forget when we put we had our station on Clubhouse. Remember Clubhouse?
Clubhouse is like a 3-month thing.
Yeah, it was like a 3 to 5 month thing where it was like during COVID, everybody was like, oh yeah, let's do this like audio platform. Now, it hasn't necessarily died. Like, Twitter kind of adopted it in some way. So everybody has that weird button down on their app now for Twitter Spaces. But it still doesn't have the same traction that like Clubhouse did. But we had a Clubhouse. It wasn't the greatest. We didn't have people, but it existed, you know? And so it's one of those things where it's like, you know, what's the saying of just like throwing crap at the wall and seeing if it'll stick. Sometimes that is how that works with digital, that it's just like, hey, we're just going to keep trying stuff out. If it doesn't work, that's fine. We learned. It's not a massive, you know, loss. Like, we've done that with like promotional things that are digital. You know, the one time we did for March Madness, we did a bracket competition, but we were like, we don't want to make it just like the same old, like, win $1 million with the perfect bracket. So it was the same time that the whole Momo phenomenon was taking place. Do you remember that with like the creepy?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I hated that.
So I went in on, I think it was like on Adobe, one of the Adobe Illustrator platforms, and I drew and created our own version of Momo that was like a cartoon version of Momo. And the
Momo is so creepy. I'm sorry. I know. Momo is just the creepiest thing ever.
It was horrifying. And of course, it was a tough call, because we were like, well, we don't want to like make it insensitive, because the theory was that like there were kids that were, you know, injuring themselves and all this kind of stuff because of it, which a lot of those turned out to be more conspiracy than actual like proven theory. But the phenomenon of it was terrifying. And so we were like, well, you know what, like we want to be like a station that like kind of steps out of the box. And so We drew the Momo design, made the head a basketball, and it was Momo's $1 million bracket challenge. And we had our imaging people create promos that were in that like, hi, I'm Momo. It was that voice. And it was like, you know, we want you to fill out your bracket for $1 million or else. Like, and it was, but it was like, to me, I heard it and I was like, this is this is great. This is genius. Oh my gosh. Like, I can't wait. Let's launch it. And we only had two people that complained, that sent us messages that were like, how could you? You're the worst, blah, 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 blah. Participation was pretty great though. And then, you know, corporate wasn't the most thrilled, but it was just one of those things where it was like, yeah, it wasn't one of our greatest promotions, but it was one of those that was like, let's take a risk. Let's, you know,
your
let's
heart
see
was
what
in
happens.
The right place. You wanted to try something new.
Yeah.
I get it. And you wanted to use something that was popular at the time. But right. The problem is that when you use something so creepy like that, that has such a bad stigma with it, it just turned. It's just so creepy.
I'm going to start sending you the audio now, like right before you like go to sleep at night before the morning show.
By the way, speaking of, I had a call with Ryan for 10 minutes. And in this 10 minutes, I think I entertained Ryan, called him to open a Lysol bottle. A Lysol bottle. I could not open this damn thing. I was trying, like, pulling it open. I was trying pushing and, like, pulling diagonal. I was trying, like, both my hands and, like, holding it with my knees. I was trying a butter knife. It could not open. And 10 minutes later.
It was a boring day, so this made my day.
I'm so glad it made your day. What made my day was actually opening it with a screwdriver.
Yeah, it was like, because what you kind of like crowbar pried it open, right, for the most part, and then it finally
I did. I was trying so hard to. So I had to stick the screwdriver all the way up into past the lip,
yeah,
where the cover was on it, and then push it open and pretty much, yes, pry it open. What I did not realize was going to happen was about an hour later, Sean Tempesta calls me and goes, he doesn't say hi. The first thing he says to me is, I'm calling to ridicule you about how you open Lysol cans. And then he made me go and put the lid back on the Lysol bottle that I was going to leave off so that he could, quote unquote, correct me on how to correctly take off a Lysol lid, which, by the way, did not work.
I'm very convinced that it was just a defective lid and it was not operator error.
I did it the second time and I did end up getting the lid off, but it's definitely user error, Ryan. It's definitely me. It's not the can, but I did have to turn my arm upside down and then do like this little, like, I don't even know, ninja move to get the lid off.
But see, like, Lysol cans did not. Like, at least in my experience of purchasing disinfectant bottles, is that most of them do not or have not had lids in the past. Like, you buy them and it's like, you know, the same lid kind of shape is there, but the little button to like squirt the stuff out is there. It's on the outside.
I've never had to worry about the lid. I've never, right, ever had to worry about it until now. And it's like this, everybody knows about these lids. Everybody knows that these new Lysol cans are not new. I don't know. I've never had to deal with it. Cans.
Is it a COVID thing? Do they put lids on because they make it protective so nobody's touching the like button until you buy it? That's what I want to know.
Isn't that ironic considering it's Lysol?
Right. Just spray the Lysol bottle with Lysol, I guess. Like Lysolception. I don't know. But it's
spray it on a paper towel and wipe the handle.
I'm convinced it was defective and it was not your fault, because you were trying your dangdest to like get that thing open with screwdrivers and everything.
So hard. I can almost guarantee you though, Ryan, this is your first time on the podcast and we've known each other for a very short amount of time, and you will come to realize that it is always my fault. It is never, ever somebody else's or the thing's fault. It is always mine. It is user error.
Yeah, I felt bad though because you were getting like run through the ringer on Twitter after tweeting about it, and people were like, are you sure you're not blonde and like all this kind of stuff? And I'm like, man, like, we are roasting her.
Oh yeah, that's a daily occurrence. Welcome to my friend group. That is, I think making fun of me is the best universal pastime. Everybody's allowed to do it, evidently.
I was gonna say, does it keep you humble? Like,
oh yes, I'm not anything.
The second you're like, man, I'm doing great. Like, I'm feeling good. Like, life is great. And then it's like, all right, well, no, 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 no. Now you can't open a Lysol can.
Ryan, I moved across the country and I'm putting furniture together in my own apartment. I put a full-blown desk together by myself and it's doing pretty good, right? I could not open a Lysol bottle, but that is, or can, and that is what I'm criticized for.
It's the simple things. So that's, I mean, I'm in the same boat. Like I as far as like stuff like building a desk or, you know, editing video or doing things that like, you know, some people have like gotten like college degrees for and stuff like that. I got that under control. But when it comes to stuff like making sure I'm painting inside the lines or like opening things, like I'm terrible at that. I always joke that like I feel like I'm the human version of those, the beginning of an infomercial where it's like the nightmare scenarios where everything is like falling on people and they open up a door and stuff flies out. Like that's a typical morning for me, I feel like.
Yes, it's I don't understand why. It's like our lives know that our profession is just telling stories over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So it provides us with the stories that we need to tell.
100%. Like, absolutely. Like, life story. Like, even, like, from the very beginning, too. Like, I imagine there's, like, some, like, toddler stories that you've probably had in the back of your head that are like, yep, this will make for great content. Or, like, embarrassing things. Like, I think back, like whenever I am in a situation like you had yesterday where you couldn't open the Lysol can, like I've had instances like that before where I've reached out to like, I'll call my parents and I'm like, hey, I can't get this like thing undone or I can't get this like container open or whatever. And then I look back at the time when I was like 2 years old and I like totally jacked up my finger because of the fact that like I put a VHS tape in the VCR and pressed play and it played. And I got my finger nearly chopped off at the age of like 2 or 3. It was my birthday party. It was my birthday party too. The tape was My Party with Barney. And it was this neat thing in the 90s where you could send your photo of your child off to the Barney Studios. And they superimposed your face on like another kid's face in the Barney episode. It was like a cartoon looking thing. It wasn't like an actor with like my face.
Okay.
No, they didn't have that kind of technology yet. But like, I was so pumped because I loved Barney the Dinosaur. And so, you know, 2-3-year-old me grabs the container, pulls the tape out, crawls over there to the VCR, shoves that sucker right there in the VCR, but forgets that my hand's also in there. And so I actually have like this like scarring on my finger that is like on my finger from that time when the skin got so like deeply chopped.
Oh man.
The second time in my life that I had to go to the hospital. The other time I think I'd like passed out when I was a baby or something, but like the second time is the more embarrassing story.
So like, I was 2 years old and I was running around my grandma's motorhome park and I was chasing my cousin with my hand in my pockets and I fell and I went face first into the rocks. And I had this big gash that filled up 2 towels worth of blood. And I had to like get it all cleaned up and everything. Thank goodness I didn't need any stitches. But the thing is that night I had it was Halloween and they were having the cutest costume competition. And my mom put me in this pumpkin costume.
Oh, no.
And I won with a big gash all from the bottom of my eye down to my chin.
Were you like the pumpkin that like has the guts pouring out of the front? Was that the idea? Like, was it a creativity thing?
No.
Or was it a sympathy vote?
It was probably a sympathy vote, to be perfectly honest. I was 2 years old with a big gash that was very noticeable on my face. So I'm pretty sure it was just a sympathy thing because this pumpkin costume was not cute. It was cute, but not cute enough to win that.
They're like, the judges are walking around and they're like, oh, ooh, oh, no.
Oh, automatic win just for sympathy, which is great. I mean, I won. I still have that costume somewhere. There's like, it's been passed to family members to try on. And there are, you know, pictures of these family members in this costume over their clothes that nobody is allowed to show or speak of, which is hilarious.
They have to like get some like makeup and make their face look like it got gashed into as well.
Yeah,
like,
or else it doesn't count. Yeah, or else it doesn't count, and you're not as cute in that costume as I was at 2 years old.
At least you had like cute costumes. I'm trying to think back to like, I think I was a baseball 1 year. No, I was a baseball player like 4 years in a row because I played t-ball, and so my parents were just like, well, put your baseball uniform on. Or I was a football player and I wore like a Penn State jersey or something a couple of years, and I think it wasn't until I was like in high school that I was like, oh, I can actually like use some creativity when it comes to like, you know, Halloween, because I was just the same thing every year for trick or treat. I was waiting for the neighborhood to be like, yeah, we're not giving you any candy because like
weren't you this last year? Or you just are yourself. Why?
Maybe spend $20 and get another costume at Walmart. Sheesh, like use some creativity.
Well, I was a witch. I like every little girl was a witch, like, you know, 5 years at least in a row.
The witch phase.
Yes, yes. And it's a long phase, believe me. But I was a witch. I was Dorothy, I think, with the basket and all this stuff. But
you just all the characters in Wizard of Oz.
I just, yeah, of course I was. But when I got older, I wanted to be more creative and I made my own costume. So 1 year I was Brendan Urie. Last year I was a pirate. The year before I was Dumb from Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Me and my friend Kirby, we were Dumb and Dumber. And I did the whole beard thing with the vest and the baseball cap, and my hair was up.
Yeah. I now need to see all of these costumes. Like, I'm gonna need, show you after we record this. I'm gonna need you to send all of these over to me, because like, especially the Brendan Urie one, I'm trying to envision like, okay, how did she resemble Panic at the Disco?
Oh, I wore leather pants with a white shirt and a black slick blazer. And I put my hair up and had this swoop in the front. And then I did black eyeliner. And I
the closest thing to that was like my freshman year. My freshman year, I was an emo homecoming king. I think I was, because I took my sister's like prom queen sash and like flipped it over and wrote on it. And then I just wore guy liner and like something like that. Eighth grade was the problematic one, because it was like 4 years before the whole Penn State like scandal, like the Sandusky scandal and everything. Mm-hmm. And I dressed as Joe Paterno, who was like not the coach that went to jail, not the coach that did all the bad stuff, but it was the coach that very likely knew what was going on and like covered it up. And so like, you know, a couple of years ago, I basically just went back and I was like, yep, delete. This is gone. Even though I was like, I was like 13 or something like that. But I'm trying to think of like what else I was like over the years in high school.
What about more recently? What were you this last year, the year before? Did you do anything?
So the year before, in like 2020, I really didn't do anything except for like I DJed a Halloween Roaring Twenties party. And so I dressed like, you know, like Roaring Twenties, like newsy looking costume. Okay. And then this year I wasn't planning on doing absolutely anything. And then I went from having like no gigs on Halloween weekend to having two gigs that were Halloween themed. And then the wedding that I was actually DJing that weekend became a Halloween themed wedding. So like the entire wedding party had costumes instead of like dressing up in like tuxes and dresses. Like one guy was like the Swedish chef or something. And that was fantastic, because he actually like did his entire best man speech, like the hurdy flirty slurdy der from like the Muppets. So that was great. It was hysterical. And so like for the wedding, because I was like, I gotta wear a suit, I dressed as like David Pumpkins from Saturday Night Live, because he has like the pumpkin suit. And then I had a DJ like a high school, it was either a middle school or high school Halloween dance, and I dressed as Flynn Rider from Rapunzel or from Tangled. And then what was the other one that I did that I dressed as? I had an elementary school trunk or treat that I had to DJ, and I had 2 hours to find something to wear. So I drove to Spirit Halloween, and the only thing that was remaining in there that fit me was an Elmo onesie and an Elmo like snapback hat. And so I was DJ Elmo for this trunk or treat, which I don't know was like fun looking or terrifying.
I've seen this photo and it's awesome. It's not bad. It definitely It's definitely, I think it's awesome. I think it's adorable.
I've always gone the onesie route is the easiest route when it comes to Halloween costumes, especially as you become an adult. It's just like, it's more affordable and it's easier because you're just like, well, there's the costume. Like, I think it was 2 years ago, I was Bugs Bunny from Space Jam before like the new one. And so I still have that one. I was Buddy the Elf 1 year, which was awesome. And I've kept that for like Christmas themed events and stuff like that. And then 1 year it was like Halloween came around the same time that Frozen 2 came out, and I was DJing like a launch party for that at a movie theater, and I DJed as Kristoff from Frozen, and I found like that was like on Amazon for like $20, and I was like, that was the best. It was more expensive for me to buy a stuffed version of the reindeer from the movie from the Disney store than it was to get the actual costume. So I have a little stuffed Sven that it's somewhere like buried in a closet somewhere. But I had that and then the costume for Kristoff. So I've got enough costumes, I think, buried in the closet that like you could, I can do some repeats probably at some point whenever like the live action Frozen is released in like 20 years. I'll have that ready to go as long as I'm the same size.
I was obsessed with Frozen when it came out. I had a stuffed Olaf. My friend went to Japan and got me a stuffed Olaf because I was so obsessed. I had all of this. I knew the word for word, both the Demi Lovato version and the initial Idina Menzel version, like everything. Obsessed.
The Panic at the Disco version of Into the Unknown, I think, is better than like Idina Menzel's version.
I think so. Into the Unknown. So when Frozen 2 came out, the game changed, right? The Panic at the Disco version definitely overtook all of the other versions for sure. But do you like Frozen 1 or 2 more?
Oh man. So Frozen 1, it's like you've got that special place in your heart, and it's like that was such a great film. The music is incredible. You know, Let It Go, just like Let It Go is the third song on my playlist that I play for 5Ks when I run 5Ks, which is a weird guilty pleasure, but it's the beat, the motivation behind it, like especially when it kicks in the bridge and you're trying to hit that first mile and you're like, my firepower furies through the air into the ground. You're huffing and puffing and try not to sing because there's 30 people behind you. You know, that one's on there. But it's Frozen 2, just like, Frozen 2 is definitely designed for the teens that watched Frozen 1 and became young adults, and just for the adults in general, because it has that like darkness to it that you didn't expect to have for like a kid's Disney movie. And like by comparison, like you put Frozen 2 up against like Encanto, like it's very dark compared to like Encanto.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Entirely agree. And Frozen 2, I believe, is better. Frozen 1 has this nostalgic aspect to it, to where you're like, oh, we'll never get rid of it. Like, it's Frozen annoying 2, and our kids played it forever.
Right.
But
your kids played it forever?
What?
I said your children played it forever?
Well, no, like the kids.
Yeah, the kids. It's just a loose term. Forever. The children in general. Frozen 2 definitely was better, in my opinion, because of the fact that, like, the characters all developed in such a cool way during that movie, and, like, just in so many different ways. But just as much as, like, Frozen 1 could have done without the whole Trolls song, Frozen 2 could have done without the weird, like, 1980s ballad that Kristoff sang when he was lost in the woods. Like, both of them have their songs that are like, okay, this could have saved us 20 minutes.
The Troll song, I like. Unpopular opinion?
It grows on me every time I hear it, like just the song. If you just play the song for me, I'm like, yeah, it's catchy. It's a great song and it makes sense in the plot. But it's just like, if you're watching the movie and it's like the 13th time that you've watched it and you're watching it with kids, like I've been over at like friends' houses and they're like, you know, 2-3-year-old children are sitting there watching it. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, we could skip this part and it would not like... It doesn't accelerate the plot. It's yes, it kind of helps like make fun of like the tension between like Anna and Kristoff, but like we could have done without it and it would have been perfectly fine. But the song is good. But the Frozen 2, the whole lost in the woods thing, like, all he had to say was like, hey, I don't know where I'm at, and eventually I'm going to find Anna at some point. But instead we were like, let's spend 4.5 minutes at synthesizers and make it feel like we're on like pot brownies and get through this whole entire thing. Like, if I were a child and I saw that for the first time, I'd be like, what? What was that, Mom? Like, what's going on?
Oh, I love it.
Spoiler alert if no one's seen Frozen 2.
Spoiler alert, but also if you haven't seen it by now,
I'm also curious how they like continue on, because I'm imagining there's going to be a 3, a 4, and a 5, just because like they're going to give it the same treatment that Lion King got whenever, you know, there was 1, 2, wasn't there like 2.5, and then there was like
there
three.
there was 1, 1.5, and 2, and now they're going to do a 3, which is a prequel with Mufasa and Scar.
Because one was like called like Simba's Pride or something like
that.
And like two, yeah.
And then 1.5 is Simone and Pumbaa.
Yeah, like they try to do it.
No, and Timon and Pumbaa.
Yeah. What's great though is like Frozen 2 is probably one of the best like Disney movie sequels out of all of them, except for maybe like a Goofy Movie 2 was good.
Goofy Movie 2, Little Mermaid 2, where we meet her daughter.
I didn't know there was a second Little Mermaid.
There's a Little Mermaid 2. We meet her daughter, and it like her daughter's now 16.
Oh.
It's great. It is so good.
Does she fall in love with like Prince Eric's like?
I'm not saying anything. You have to just watch it.
I'm gonna see if this is on. I'm checking Disney Plus right now on my phone to see if this is on here. Cause there's some movies that aren't on Disney Plus that I wish existed on here. Like My Date with the President's Daughter. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, of course.
Deep cut there. Oh. But because it was a Wonderful World of Disney, like ABC television movie, it's not on here. Whereas like if it was a DCOM, it would have been on here apparently. Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea.
Yeah, that's
and
the
then
one.
They also have the really awful live concert version that they did in 2019 with like John Stamos as the chef. Do you remember that?
What?
Shaggy was the crab with Sebastian.
I don't remember this at all.
Yes, Queen Latifah was Ursula. It was a live concert version that ABC did where it was like footage from the movie, and then when it came to like a musical number, they cut to this like live like soundstage where they did all the performances and stuff. And the girl that played Moana in the movie Moana played Ariel. So she was good and John Stamos was good, but Shaggy as Sebastian was just unnecessary. Oh, there's Ariel's Beginning too. Is that
it's
like
Ariel's
the
Beginning? I don't know what that is.
It's 1 hour and 20 minutes. It is long before Prince Eric, Ariel faces a choice between family and music. And it's it was made in 2008.
I don't know how I feel about that, but definitely watch the second one and let me know what you think. So my aunt just messaged me and said that you look like Derek Huff.
I look like Derek Huff?
Uh-huh.
I've had somebody tell me that before, and it's a compliment for sure. I
oh,
100%.
Yeah.
100 times over. I just wish I had his dance skills. I did do a Dancing with the Stars fundraiser for, there's an organization called the Arc of Washington County that's in my area that they pick like relevant people in the community and they pair them all up, and they do a ballroom dance competition like in front of a live audience every year, and it's called Dancing with the Arc Stars. And instead of doing it as like a judged competition where the scores determine the winner, it's like whoever raises the most money for the organization or whatever. But like we knew that like my partner and I, we were like the youngest couple that had ever like competed in the whole entire thing over the 10 years that it existed. So we knew we were like, we're going up against like two other pairings that like they have more of a community, connection. They've got the philanthropist in their pocket. They're good to go. Like they'll get all the donations. So we were like, we're going to put our all into the dancing part of it. And so like, I've got footage somewhere of like some of these ballroom routines where I did feel like Derek Huff, but it's a little hard. I got two left feet for sure. So I wouldn't go as far as to say that I'm that kind of Derek Huff, but
it adds to the entertainment value though. It does.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I like to jump around when I DJ. But like when people are like, hey, do you know the dance to this song? I'm like, no, like the
and
last
you don't
two
want
years,
me to try.
Right. The last 2 years of people trying to like ask me to do the fancy like song. And I'm like, no, I don't know that. Or like, you know, I'll do like a high school dance and they're like, hey, do you know this TikTok dance? I'm like, nope, don't even try. I do like the fact that the top trending TikTok dance right now is the routine from Night to Remember, the song from High School Musical 3.
Oh, yes. Do you know like, how hard that dance actually is,
nights,
though?
The night of nights. Yeah. Yes. I like, it's, I want to try it, though.
We all try to do it in our living rooms, but it is actually difficult.
Yes. I was going to say, like, let's try that at Chocolate World. Like, that's not in Chocolate World. Like, I'd say, like, parking lot. Like, I think it would look ridiculous if we just sat a phone inside of, like, the merch store and people were walking by, like, what's their deal? Like, what's wrong with them? Why does that guy look like he's, like, twitching? What's going on? Like, he just fell. Is he okay? Should we go check on him? Like, but I do like that that's a trending thing for sure.
One more thing. I am about to be, hopefully, fingers crossed, a cat mom. And I know that you are a cat dad. And I want to know advice. And I want to know the like most important top five things that I need to know about being a cat mom.
Ooh, top five things. I'm not going to do them in any particular order. But one, treat that thing like your baby, at least like for the first like month before it be like cats are independent. That's the beauty of it, is that like, you know, you could let that thing run wild for the, you know, first couple of weeks that you're there, and you know, it'll come to you when it wants to come to you. It won't if it doesn't, like that kind of thing. But like I was told early on whenever I adopted my first cat, Jack, that like whenever they're sleeping at first in like in their house and stuff, or in your place, like walk up and just like gently pet them like while they're sleeping. It gives them that like almost that trust of being like, oh, this person's caring for me, like that kind of thing. So like that, like not constant care, but that like every now and again, just like making sure that you're affirming the cat like it's a human being, is kind of good. Keeping the litter box clean is very crucial. Having two cats and still having a litter robot, every now and again, there's moments where I'm like, ooh. And the beauty of it is like I keep my litter box in my studio, so I know when it's time to clean the litter box, because I'll go in to like do my work and I'll be like, oh yeah, I need to clean that out before I get started with anything, because it smells terrible. So that constant cleaning is huge, is vastly important. Playing for the first like stage of having the cat is pretty crucial, because like Jack over time, whenever like I adopted Crush about 6 or 8 months later, Crush became the playful cat. Jack became the one that just kind of was like, yeah, I'm going to go over and lay down. You play with the younger one. And so like over time, like the cat, if it's not being played with, is just like, well, yeah, I'll play with some stuff, but I'm not really into this whole play thing. And then, like I told you before, don't get toys that make noise. Like, for me, it's not that big of a deal. For me, it's not that big of a deal because, like, you know, I kind of can create my own schedule. However, with you having a morning show, don't get jingle balls. Like,
I would never sleep.
You would never sleep, especially because you're in an apartment, too. So it's going to be like she's just going to bat those suckers around the whole entire night. They always choose not to play with those toys until you are trying to go to sleep. That's just, I don't know why. It's just a talent of theirs. It's just a thing. And determine early on if you want the cat to sleep with you or not, because that will be like eventually that like over time, if you decide early on, like, okay, like I'm going to let the cat like lay in bed with me at night and stuff like that, they will for forever. Like you won't be able to change that unless you obviously shut the door. But even then, they're just going to paw at the door and cry. So just like make sure you like you can like cats can be trained like dogs, not in the same way. Like I do see people that train their cats to walk and they get leashes and they're able to do that. But it's so hard. But like, you know, habits and stuff. Like, I wish I would have been able to work with my cats to not jump on counters and knock stuff over early on. Now it's basically too late. Like, I spray Crush with the water spritzer that they tell you to use. And he, like, enjoys it. He looks at me and he's like, thanks. I'm going to do more destruction now. You've just made me worse. So early on, it would have been fine if I would have been like, yeah, I'll just, you know, I'll use the spritzer and he'll get out of that habit. So habits are harder to get out later in the game than they are like earlier on, especially whenever, like, you know, she gets there to the apartment and walks around and kind of discovers everything. And don't be discouraged by the fact that like the first day or so she's going to like hide in wherever she can find, you know, hiding spaces at. Cause she's just gonna like over time get used to her like newer surroundings and stuff. But, that's where that extra like affection and stuff will come into play. But okay. I am pumped. Like for those of you don't know, like I have blown up her phone with nothing but like Amazon links to things that I've gotten. You know, I did find, I'm giving you one of my brushes because they weren't fans of it. But again, early on, if you create the habit of them liking it, they'll like it. It's a glove with a brush as the hand. So you literally can pet your cat and it's brushing the cat. It's genius. They hated it, but you know,
but she might like it.
She might love it. I don't know. It's worth a shot. And get catnip too. Cats love catnip.
Yeah.
And catnip toys are the best. Like Crush is a dog in a cat's body. And so he'll carry, he has this little avocado catnip toy that he picks up and walks into the studio. I'll be like on a call or something for like work. And you'll just hear, howl, 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 like howling. And he's sitting right at my leg with the toy, like right at my foot. He like drops it down. He plays fetch. Like a dog. And it's the cutest thing in the world, but there are some times that I'll be on like I'll be calls with like brides and grooms because we're DJing weddings and they'll be like, is everything okay? Like your cat sounds like it's in danger. And I'm like, no, he just wants me to throw his toy and I'm not gonna do it. I don't have time to right now. So but they're the best. They're the most independent and dependent animals ever.
I am so excited. I have been a dog person my entire life. I owned a cat at one point in my life, but I don't really remember it. So I really just say that I've never owned a cat. And I am excited though for this new thing, this new journey. Cause I need a friend. I need an animal pet of some sorts. And I think that the best decision is a cat right now.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I saw her and I fell in love.
It's a friend that won't bully you either on Twitter. when you're struggling to open the Lysol can, she's just going to look at you weird. But she won't be able to say anything, which is even better. Like,
they do it all in good fun. And not to mention that I would do the same thing to them. So really,
yeah,
it's all in love.
I like to take like the responsibility or the like inspiration of the fact that I think I inspired you to adopt a cat. So, to be fair,
it started with Carla Marie. Carla Marie and Anthony own 5,000 cats. And I'm watching them be cat parents, and I'm seeing them do a fantastic job, by the way, and their cats are so cute. And I'm like, well, I wonder what it would be like to have a cat. I've never owned a cat. That would be so fun. And then all of a sudden, we start talking about cats, and you and I start talking about, like, your cats and how you got. And then you start being like, you should get a cat.
Yep. And the first time we hung out, I literally opened up Pet Finder and was trying to find you a cat. I was like, well, look at this one. How about this one? How about this one?
You went to Facebook and you were like, these are all the cats with funny names.
Yes. And then I think I did go to like an actual like adoption gallery and just started like showing you cats on like Pet Finder or whatever, like inside of the Chinese restaurant with the weird blind date going on next to us.
Hilarious, by the way.
It was like, I'm not like other guys or whatever. The guy's quotes were like straight out of a like frat bro movie. Like it was the worst.
Oh yes, he was trying way too hard, and she was either loving it and just really quiet, or was like, oh, this guy is a jerk, but I'm just gonna amuse him.
Yeah, basically.
All right, Ryan, where can people find you on social? Because I know you're on all of them.
Oh, it's mostly at Ryan Smetzer on everything, on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook, all that good stuff. Yeah, basically at Ryan Smetzer, and that's Smetzer, because That's some people think I'm saying Spencer. The amount of times I've taken on a new persona and people have been like, because some people will call me just Smetzer, like they'll say just my last name because it just sounds fun. And so then people are like, hey, Spencer. And I'm like, that's nope, not me.